Lion's Gate. Twisted Pictures. A Lion's Gate release. Twisted Pictures presents. A Berg Cools Hoffman production. A film by Darren Lynn Boozman.
Game over.
I'll fucking kill you! You fucking bitch! You fucking bitch! I'll fucking kill you! No!
A torch lies on the floor in darkness, its angular spray of light illuminating white tiles splattered with blood. And a gun. A man rolls over and reaches for it desperately, but it's inches beyond his grasp. He rolls on his back, sits up and hurriedly unties his boot while glancing anxiously over towards the weapon. The man lies on his front again and uses his boot to bring the gun closer. Once it's in his hand, he releases the clip and slams it down in frustration. For a moment, he rests his head on the floor, his body shaking. Then he uses the boot to try and reach the torch. As he draws it to him, it briefly lights up more blood on the tiled floor. The man grabs the torch, takes it to the corner and kicks violently at the pipe that he's shackled to by a thick chain around his ankle.
Daniel!
He rolls over again in despair. Slowly he sits up, holding the torch by his head, and shines it at the floor by the tiled wall, where he sees a rusty hacksaw. He grabs it and starts frantically cutting at the chain. When it has no effect, he throws the saw down. As he turns over, he lights up the body of a dead, blood-stained man lying on his back. He swings the beam of light round to another pipe and chain and a bloody, severed foot attached to it. The man looks down at the saw in his hand, then quickly pulls off his sock and stuffs it in his mouth. He places the saw on his ankle above the shackle. Then he throws the saw down again and lies back in the darkness. He sits up and shines the light on another dead body, half decomposed and slumped against a wall. Nearby is the broken cistern lid of an old stained toilet. He picks it up, lies the torch on the floor and holds the lid high above his foot in both hands. Shaking and fearful, he prepares to slam it down. He falls backwards, but sits up again. He crushes his foot and ankle. He pushes the lid aside, takes hold of his mangled foot. And snaps the ankle completely. He slides the shackle down, breaking the rest of his foot away. Saw 3. The white burning light of a welder's torch cuts a narrow vertical fissure into the wall of a pitch black room, completing the shape of a doorway which is pushed out. Armed and masked police rush in, torches and red laser beams mounted on their guns, lighting up the room as they search it. One of the men lowers his gun, takes off his helmet and lifts up his mask, looking around the room in shock.
Oh my God. Someone call Carrie.
Call came in at 11:45. A woman heard an explosion. Fire department was first on the scene.
Carrie.
Is it him? Eric. Is it him?
We don't know yet.
Carrie, an attractive woman with wavy brown hair, goes into the room and clasps her hands by her mouth.
It's not Detective Matthews.
Inside the room, marked with evidence tags, is a mutilated body with bloody and dirty limbs, some severed and burnt, and spilled intestines.
What happened?
The victim was held in place by these chains.
A man streaked with blood, wearing just his boxers, is chained to a chair. He's in an old, dark and disused classroom. The man stands up. Thick chains have been attached to him with hoops that pierce his skin and mouth. White static on a TV set gives way to a fearful white mask with large and distorted features that slowly turns to face him.
Hello, Troy. I want to play a game. This game will take place in a room not much bigger than the room you've spent most of your life in, a prison cell. Despite all of the advantages and privileges that you were given at birth, you have returned to prison again and again. More comfortable in chains than you are in freedom. Tonight, we will see how far you are willing to go to break those chains once and for all. Live or die, Troy. Make your choice.
The TV set goes off, and as Troy looks around the room, he sees a homemade bomb and timer counting down from 1.5 minutes. The detective holds a piece of evidence out to Kerry.
This was the bomb. All he had to do was release himself from each of the chains. Walk out the door. Before it went off. All he had to do?
The timer shows 1 minute 13 seconds as Troy looks down at the chained hoop through his hand, positioned beneath his little finger. He balls his fist and prepares himself. Then yanks his hand up, ripping the hoop out. 1 minute left. He does the same with his other hand, shaking violently with pain. The next chain is attached through the skin of his shoulder and he pulls it out. The next is above his hip.
Oh God.
He rips it free with his hand. 30 seconds left and he pulls out the hoop on his other shoulder. Nineteen seconds left, one in his upper arm. And above his other hip. He steps forward, ripping his feet free. 8 seconds left, the last one's a thick hoop that goes into his mouth and comes out under his chin. He prepares to pull it. Kerry's crouching down, looking at the floor when she picks up one of the hoops.
What I don't understand is, how the hell could Jigsaw do all of this? He was damn near on his deathbed the last time we saw him.
I'm not so sure he did. So far this doesn't follow any of his patterns.
Meaning?
Well, how'd you get in here?
We cut the door down.
Why?
Because somebody heard an explosion and called us.
I mean, why did you have to cut the door down?
It was welded shut. Bloody truck couldn't get in here.
Exactly.
I don't follow.
If the aim of Jigsaw's game was to get out before the bomb went off, then why was the door welded shut? The guy couldn't get out if he wanted to.
You won't believe this. We got the tape out clean.
Kerry looks down at the floor, at the limbless body with its innards splayed out around it, along the trail of evidence to a foot. The detective walks across the path, but the trail continues. At night, Kerry's lying in a bathtub with her head dropped to one side and her eyes closed. Candles burn in the room, casting a warm tinted glow over it. In her dressing gown, she walks back into the bathroom and wipes steam off the mirror. Matthews is standing behind her in the reflection. When she turns round, there's no one there. She watches the video.
Hello, Troy. I want to play a game. Live or die, Troy. Make your choice.
Sitting on the bed, she looks through a variety of large photos. Then she realizes the static on the TV has been replaced with an image that's looking down through a slightly open door. She tries to stop it with the remote, but nothing happens. Kerry gets up off the bed, then stops and looks back in alarm. The image is live and now shows her standing in the room through the gap. She waves her hand, and when the action's mirrored on the TV, she grabs her gun and shoots at the door. With the weapon still in front of her, she walks slowly towards it. As on the screen, it's slightly ajar, and she tries to peer past it, then kicks it open. There's nothing there, and she uses the image on the TV to work out where the camera's positioned. She reaches forward, and as her hand zooms up on the television screen, a hooded figure steps out behind her and grabs her. A concrete floor is illuminated by green light, a pool of blood, a body suspended a foot or so above it. A spiked contraption clamps around the ribs, arms hanging impotently to the side. It's Kerry, and something's dropped into a beaker of clear liquid suspended beside her head. She's trapped in a macabre harness in a stone arch tunnel, sunlight pouring down on her from a grate above. Static on a TV screen clears, and the same masked man faces her.
Hello, Kerry. I want to play a game. Up until now, you have spent your life among the dead, piecing together their final moments. You're good at this because you, like them, are also dead. Dead on the inside. You identify more with a cold corpse than you do with a living human. I believe you want to join your true family, indeed your only family, in death. The device you are wearing is hooked into your ribcage. And by the time this tape is finished, you will have 1 minute to find a way out. At the end of that minute, you should know better than anyone. What happens then? There is a single key that will unlock the harness, Kerry. It is right in front of you. All you have to do is reach in and take it. But do it quickly. The acid will dissolve the key in a matter of seconds. Make your choice.
The key lies at the bottom of the large beaker suspended in front of her. Kerry strains hopelessly at her chains. She tries to pull the rib clamp open, but it's solid. Then she looks at the beaker. A metal hoop's clamped around it, attached to taut chains hanging from the ceiling to hold it in place. Kerry holds her hand above it, and a finger touches the liquid. She plunges her hand in. She pulls it out again without the key, her skin already blistering in angry red welts, then goes in again. As she fumbles for the key, her skin peels off and the acid turns red with blood. but she manages to grab it and undoes the padlock with trembling hands. Once it's unlocked, she has to prise the jacket open, which means pulling the hooks out of her chest. She doesn't have the strength to do it. Then she looks up as a partially obscured female figure in a red top slowly approaches. Carrie stares, open-mouthed. Her arms go up, and the torturous spiked jacket around her chest springs open, ripping her torso apart. Carrie's body hangs limply in the harness. A dimly lit bedroom at night. A man lies on one side of the bed with his arms folded, the duvet down over his ankles. A clothed woman sits on the opposite corner at the far end, looking down at her wedding ring.
I gotta be at the hospital by 9.
It's Tuesday. I thought you started at 11.
Yeah, well, they changed things on me last minute.
Well, you better head off then.
He watches her take a pill from a bottle.
Not gonna take a shower?
Nah. I'm just gonna take a shower at the hospital.
Can we just talk for 5 minutes? Hey, how about we just make eye contact for 5 seconds?
What's wrong?
Enough. Just everything. Come in.
What is it you want from me, Chris?
A divorce.
Lynn turns and walks out, irritated. An emergency patient's wheeled hurriedly through the hospital.
Car skidded into oncoming traffic.
GTS, 8.
Correct. 80 over pulse, ready. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Where's Lynn?
Page Dr. Denlin. Set up an art line.
Dr. Lynn Denlin, please report to trauma immediately.
Lynn's sitting in the locker room, depressed.
Lynn!
Pressure's dropping rapidly.
Pressure down to 70. He's going into shock.
Get an OR ready. We gotta crack his chest.
Can we get a bolus 500 wide open?
No.
What?
Lynn listens to the child's chest.
No air entry on the right side.
And?
It's not blood loss, it's tension email. It's got chest tube venom.
We gotta get him to OR now.
His stats are dropping. He's gonna code.
I'm doing it.
She uses a scalpel on the boy's torso, then puts a tube in while the woman who fetched her looks up at a monitor.
I'm getting a rush of air.
Stats are improving. Pressure back to 80. Pressure normal.
Lynn makes sure the child's okay, then leaves, but the woman eyes her warily, shakes her head, and follows her out. In the corridor, she pulls her into an empty cubicle and draws the curtain.
Look, if you've got something on your mind, go upstairs to psych. Just don't bring it in here. We don't have any seconds to spare, Lynn. The woman standing in front of me had to be dragged from the locker room to put a chest tube in a trauma patient. Lynn Denlin should have been the first one there.
She walks off.
Lynn! Lynn!
Later, Lynn's standing in front of her open locker, dressed in normal clothes, looking at a medicine pot on the top shelf. She takes it down and pulls off the lid, then puts it back on again. She shuts the door, which has children's drawings taped to the inside, then picks her things up off the floor and walks through the room. She pulls the door to get out.
I'm locked in!
Somebody there? Hello?
Lynn tries the door again, then wanders back through the locker room.
Anybody here?
She looks around, then takes a mobile phone out of her pocket and dials. She walks back towards the door, but someone in a pig mask with long black hair is hiding behind the locker and grabs her. A hooded figure carrying groceries in a paper bag unlocks a metal gate inside a building. The person walks down a short, wide corridor, then pushes a heavy swing door open and enters a vast and gloomy brick wall workshop. The pig mask, ropes, and several torture instruments have been stored by one of the walls. The person switches on some monitors. Behind them, the huge room's filled with tables and workbenches covered in instruments, tools, and mannequins in various poses. Lynn's tied to a chair, unconscious with a gag in her mouth. As the lights come on, her eyes flicker open and she takes in the horror of her surroundings. The figure pulls the hood off. It's Amanda, a slim, muscular woman with shoulder-length brown hair. Lynn spits her gag out as Amanda takes a sharp blade and strolls over to her.
Who are you? Who are you? What is this? What are you doing?
Amanda holds the blade up to her own lips and crouches down in front of Lynn.
Are you gonna behave?
She throws the knife aside and releases the brakes on Lynn's chair.
Let's go. What is this place? What is this place?
She pushes the chair through the torture workshop and some plastic curtains into a makeshift tiled operating room where an old man, John Jigsaw Kramer, is lying on a bed. He removes the oxygen mask from his face. Jigsaw looks at her through half-closed eyes.
Hello, Dr. Denlon. You may not remember me, but I most certainly remember you. I was a guest at your hospital once.
Where am I?
Do you remember me?
The woman gives Lynn some notes with words like frontal lobe tumor, Dr. Lawrence Gordon, and John Kramer standing out.
I've seen you on television. Lawrence Gordon was your doctor.
I was his patient and he was mine. As you can see from that report, my prognosis isn't good. Would you agree?
She reads words like brainstem, frontal lobe, and inoperable.
There's no preventative treatment for what you have.
I remember you saying that to me once before in almost the exact same tone. Leave it to a doctor to find such a cold, clinical way of saying I'm a dead man walking. Looking at me, how long would you say I have left?
I'd have to examine you. Even then, a frontal lobe tumor is unpredictable. The growth depends on the rate of mitosis versus apoptosis and...
I'm sorry, but is all this crude medical equipment around me causing you to believe that you're still inside a hospital?
No.
Then why are you speaking to me in that graduate school medical jargon? Look at me! Now you look at me. I asked you a simple question based on your experience. How long do you think I have left?
It's not a simple answer. Based on your file, I'd say not long.
John lies back down on his bed again.
Death is a surprise party. Unless, of course, you're already dead on the inside.
He raises the bed up.
Unless you're the type of person who swallows antidepressants to hide the pain, turns their back on their husband, neglects their child, who has every possible advantage in life, but chooses not to advance.
What do you want from me?
What do I want? I want to play a game. The rules of the game are simple. Consequences for breaking them are great. Death. You're being tested. Your will is being tested. Your will to keep someone alive. Can you do that? Can you follow the rules and grant someone the gift of life?
What is this? No! Get it! No! No! What is this? What are you doing to me?
Amanda puts a metal neck brace around her with five barrels facing inwards.
The device that you're wearing is linked to my heart rate monitor. The second that heart rate monitor flatlines, or you move out of range, an explosion will go off in that collar. Your life and my life will end simultaneously.
Colleen, please don't do this to me. I have a family. I have a family.
Let me give you the simple version. You will keep him alive, whatever it takes. No excuses, no equivocations, no crying.
Keep him alive.
Out there, on those screens, we have another test subject. A man. He will face a series of tests. You have to keep John alive until he makes it through. If he completes all of his tests and John is still breathing, then I will remove your collar and you're free to go.
You're a vital piece of my puzzle, Dr. Denlin. A critical part of what could be my final test. Amanda, it's time to start our game.
Amanda walks back out into the cavernous and chaotic workshop. A man's trapped in a small wooden crate. Slivers of light shine through the gaps between the slats of wood, infiltrating his darkness. He cannot break the crate. It's high up on a forklift truck in a corridor.
Hello? Is there anybody out there?
The man finds a tape player and starts it.
Hello, Jeff. Over the past few years, you have become a shell of your former self, consumed with hatred and vengeance. Vengeance against the drunk driver who killed your only son. Vengeance against the killer who, to your surprise and dismay, was set free after a hasty trial. Today, however, it is you who will be put on trial. To escape from where you are, you will have to face a series of tests. You will have to suffer to move forward through each of them. But with each one, you will also have a chance. A chance to forgive. When you complete the tests, I promise you, you will finally come face to face with the man responsible for the loss of your child. That will be your ultimate test. Can you forgive him? You better hurry, though. In 2 hours, the doors will lock, and this place will become your tomb. This is what you've been waiting for, Jeff. Let the game begin. No!
Jeff manages to break part of it. It falls off the forklift and shatters as it hits the ground. Then Jeff's pointing a gun. He's in a room in a house, unshaven and wearing a dressing gown.
Fucking son!
He points the gun at himself in the mirror. Then he looks down at a bench which is covered with stuffed toys, although there's a gap in the middle. Jeff bursts into another bedroom where a little girl's sleeping and looks around in agitation, waking her up.
Where is it? Where is it?
He sees the cuddly toy that she's holding and sits down on the bed.
How many times do I have to tell you before you get it in your head?
I just wanted to sleep with someone.
No, you're just nothing. You don't touch things in Dylan's room.
He snatches it off her.
Kenny?
She nods and he straightens her hair a little before standing up and walking out. The girl lies back down, looking upset. The toy's back in its place on the bench, and Jeff's sitting on the bed beside it, staring into space and holding onto a red top. In the room is a desk with framed photos on it and children's toys set out on some shelves. The little girl walks out of her room and stands in the open doorway, clutching a different cuddly toy. She goes in and stands behind Jeff.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
He turns slightly at the sound of her voice, but doesn't look at her.
You know I love you, don't you? What do you think Mommy would say if she saw us like this?
I'm gonna go get ready for school.
She goes, and after a moment, Jeff stands up as well. He walks out, leaving the gun on the bed. Jeff stops in the hall and goes back into the bedroom, closing the door. The pigman's hiding behind it. Jeff comes round on the floor, lying on the pieces of the broken crate, and slowly extracts himself from them, getting painfully to his feet. He looks round, still dazed, with blood trickling from a wound above his eye. Jeff walks unsteadily down the wide passageway. He knocks a pallet over and stumbles, then sees a camera on the wall with a red light shining on it.
Hey!
He waves his arms at it, still holding a plank of wood in one hand, then looks down at a small table in front of him. On it is an open box with red lining, and inside a piece of paper with "Open the door, Jeff," typed across the middle. There's also a torn photo of himself and a key. He picks all three objects up, glancing occasionally at the camera with wide-eyed confusion and fear, and heads through some plastic curtains. Amanda's standing in the raised control room of the workshop, looking out through tall glass windows at the dimly lit room. She turns and watches a bank of monitors on the desk behind her, stepping towards one which shows the forklift truck, broken crate, and now empty corridor. She starts walking towards the operating room where Lynn's with John.
All right, John, I need you to look at my nose. Right here. Look at my nose, please. Follow my flashlight.
John does it through half-closed eyes as Amanda watches from behind some plastic curtains. She steps into the operating room.
It's begun. He's out of the box.
Lynn looks at her watch while she takes John's pulse.
So? My 20-second analysis without any medical equipment is that his brain's herniating. He needs to go to the hospital and have an operation to decompress his brain.
Come here.
No.
Let me ask you something. Oh, God! Did I bring John to you? Or did I bring your self-centered ass to him? Now you're gonna start fucking paying attention. No one's going to any hospital.
can't perform miracles. You're giving him painkillers. For a tumor like this, he needs steroids, prednisone.
Oh, good, yeah.
Maybe we could try some corticosteroids, you know, like dexamethasone. Why don't you fucking tell me something that I don't know, you stupid cunt?
The only place that he can get those drugs is in a hospital. Or else he's gonna die.
You are not a good listener. I think you missed the part. That if he dies, you die.
You're asking me to do the impossible.
I'm not asking you. He is. He chose you.
Not me.
Amanda. My doctor can't do what's being asked of her. If you're threatening her, the rules of our game have been made very clear. You need to abide by those rules.
Sorry.
Lying on his back, John begins to twitch violently. He throws up, fitting and looking deathly pale. Lynn runs to him.
Amanda! Amanda, I need your help! Amanda, he needs oxygen! Oxygen, Amanda! Not a space.
Lynn tries to hold him still while Amanda does it.
I need you to hold him down. Keep his head to the side. You got it?
She does what she's told, looking very afraid. Lynn runs to the drug trolley while John's arm pumps up and down uncontrollably. Blood comes out of his mouth and into the oxygen mask.
What are you doing? Ativan! Do you have Ativan? No! Back off!
She holds his head.
Stay with me, John. You're almost through. Stay with me, John. Stay with me. We're almost done with this.
His fitting slowly ends, and the monitors return to normal. Amanda leaves the room in shock. Lynn keeps her hand on John's cheek until he's fully calm again, while Amanda stands crying in the workshop outside. Lynn storms out to her.
Was that enough for you? You ready to go to the hospital now? He needs to have an operation.
Okay. But we do it here. We do it here.
What?
What do you need?
I need anesthetic for a procedure like this.
Anesthetic? What else?
Even with an anesthetic, LeVay,
anesthetic? What else?
Power drill.
Jeff pushes open a large double door with a small window in it at head height. He enters into another long, cluttered corridor, poorly lit with the lights along the ceiling flickering on and off. Clear plastic sheets cover objects along the walls. Jeff stops and stares at a door with red graffitied letters on it that reads, "Face your fears." He pulls it open and vapor escapes as he steps into the freezing cold, blue-lit room. A body's hanging by the wrists in the center of it. He grabs desperately at the door as it closes behind him, but to no avail. Then he turns and his eyes widen in horror as more lights come on and he sees the naked woman hanging with her head drooped down towards the floor. Dropping the plank, he steps fearfully towards her as her eyes open and she looks up at him. He tries his key in the padlock that chains her wrists.
Okay. Miko, please, I'm so cold. I can't feel my heart. Please.
He tries a padlock on another door, then sees a tape player and picks it up.
Welcome to your first test, Jeff. For the past 3 years, you've cursed the name of all those you thought were responsible for the death of your son. You fantasize those accountable will pay. Well, you will find a woman in front of you, chained in place. This will prevent her from running, much like she did on the day your son was hit.
Photos of Dylan on his bike.
Her name is Danica Scott. She was the only witness present at the scene of your son's untimely demise.
More photos show him lying on the floor and Danica looking from her car.
If not for her own self-absorption and cowardice, she could have brought your son's killer to justice. Now it is you who has a chance to bring her to justice.
A hose sprays water over her.
Behind the pipes on the back wall, you will find the key that will free her and bring you one step closer to the man responsible for the loss of your child. Will you claim the key to save only yourself? Or can you find it within you to save another? Make your choice.
I didn't do anything to you!
That's exactly it. You didn't do anything!
I'm fucking dying.
He died! In my arms! My 8-year-old son died in my arms.
More water sprayed at her. Jeff watches, pacing, his dressing gown drawn around him and his arms clamped across his chest to keep him warm as Danica suffers the spray of water on her already freezing body. As the hose stops, he steps towards her. Starts spraying her again, so Jeff tries to unlock the padlock on the door, but it won't work. He goes over to some vertical pipes where a key hangs from a chain behind them and puts his arm through to reach it, but it's several inches too far away. He gives up and looks around the room where his eyes settle on Danica, who's now covered in a thin layer of smooth, shiny ice. Jeff touches her face. He recoils in horror, then goes back over to the pipes and puts his arm through them again, straining for the key. His cheek sticks to the freezing metal pipes. Then he grabs the key and has to rip his face away from the pipe. Bent double with pain and trauma, Jeff goes back to Danica and tries to unlock the padlock that holds the chains around her wrists. But like her, it's completely covered in ice and a pointless task. Sorrowfully over her face, then gets out of the room. In the tiled corridor, Jeff frantically takes off his dressing gown and slumps on the floor for a moment. Then he stands and goes over to another open box with another note in it. The simple message reads, "One bullet will end it all." On the back of the card is a torn photo of Dylan. Jeff lifts a bullet out of the box. Lynn carries a tray of surgical instruments slowly through the torturer's workshop, past a chainsaw in a mannequin's hand. Past a mannequin with no arms and the name Paul written on its chest. She puts the tray down and explores further, looking round at the multitude of instruments and torturous devices, including a brace around a mannequin's head, which she goes over to. It's a large metal device made of bars, cogs and levers like an animal trap, and she reaches out to it, then changes her mind. There are more objects on the workbench and a small metal box which she opens. Then she notices a white, half-hidden telephone and reaches out for it. The trap around the mannequin's head is triggered, crushing it, and she jumps back in fright. Amanda's behind her.
Amanda, if you really care about John, you won't let me do this to him. I mean, you're a smart woman and you know what's right for him.
I'm sorry. I know it's hard to concentrate when you're surrounded by so many things you could kill me with. Like this axe I saw you looking at. Take it. Please, it's yours. Come on. I go for the neck, but I'm not the brain surgeon. Just do it quietly so John doesn't hear me die. Otherwise, he's likely to get upset, rip off his heart rate monitor. Then, you just have to find the sensor and disarm it so you can walk more than 30 feet out that door without the collar detonating. Or, you could try and take the collar off yourself. That could be tricky. Slightest knock in the wrong place could trigger it. I should know. I built it.
She takes the axe back.
So? Do you have everything you need?
I have the instruments to cut someone open. I don't have the tools to save a life.
You'd be surprised what tools can save a life.
She picks up the sprung trap. The trap's placed on a cluttered workbench lit only by an overhead lamp, where John, looking younger and well, is painting the elongated face mask that appears to the victims on the TV screens. He paints red spirals on the large angular cheeks and blackens the eye holes. In front of him is a black and white photo of Amanda. The trap's carried into a concrete room where Amanda's unconscious in a chair.
Hello, Amanda. You don't know me, but I know you. I want to play a game. There is only one key to open the device.
It goes around her head. The body lies on the floor with a black question mark painted on his stomach.
Look around, Amanda. Know that I'm not lying. Live or die. Make your choice.
John backs away from her. Amanda bursts out of the room.
Congratulations. You are still alive. Most people are so ungrateful to be alive. Not anymore.
Amanda, do not be afraid. Your life has just begun.
Sitting on a bed in the workshop, Amanda locks a small metal box and hides it under her sleeping bag. She goes into the operating room and sits in a chair looking at John.
He made it through the freezer room. He tried to save.
Lynn tests a hand drill and adds it to her tray of surgical instruments.
There are some things I need you to do for me. In my desk, in the center drawer, an envelope, your name on it.
Lynn looks at herself in a broken mirror.
She's gonna do a procedure on you.
Yeah.
Just to relieve the pressure on your brain.
Yeah.
Help with the headaches.
Amanda looks down at the floor, then tilts her head back and wipes her face.
You're stronger now. And I believe in you.
Lynn puts the mirror down tearfully.
He chose her because she's the best, right?
That's one reason I chose her.
Jeff walks down another gloomy tiled passageway. He looks from side to side, a nasty strip of skin missing from his cheek where it's stuck to the cold pipe. A light flickers at the far end, revealing something metal and red lying on the floor. Jeff stares as he walks slowly towards it, past large metal boxes stacked haphazardly by the walls. As he gets nearer, the object becomes recognizable as a mangled child's bike. Lying beside it is a small body dressed in black with white gloves, like a child dummy. Jeff has flashbacks to Dylan lying in the road under his own bike. He picks the dummy up, which is wearing a smaller version of Jigsaw's white mask. He holds it up in front of him. Then drops it on the floor again. He walks towards a metal door at the end of the corridor with red words painted on it that read, "Time to let go." Jeff tries to open it, which triggers some sort of mechanism inside, and once he's through, it swings shut behind him again. He's in a large, bare brick room.
Please help me! I'm in here! Please get me out of here! Help me! No! I know you're there! Please! Please help me!
Jeff climbs some steps to a tape recorder.
I can hear you! Please! Answer me! Help me!
The man's lying at the bottom of a vat.
Please! Help me! Please.
A chain around his neck pins him to the floor.
Get me out of here, please! Please help me! Get me out of here! Please! Don't just stand there! Help me!
Jeff looks down at him, then presses play.
Jeff, when the judge presiding over your case sentenced your boy's murderer so lightly, your soul never recovered. Now you have the power to sentence his soul straight to hell. Or you can forgive. The key that will free him is hidden inside your son's possessions. Possessions you have clung to for far too long. Now if you flip the switch on the incinerator underneath you, a fire will cleanse you of this obsession and destroy them all, leaving only the key remaining. It is also the key that will bring you closer to the man accountable for taking your child. He doesn't have much time, Jeff. Let the game begin.
Please get me out of here, please!
Spinning metal slicing discs start up.
What is that?
Then hooks hanging from the ceiling start moving, one carrying a rotting pig carcass with maggots milling about its snout. It's dropped into the slicing trough. Its guts are spewed out into the vat and over the man.
I have a criminal court sentence, I say! You can't do this to me!
You don't remember me.
Another pig goes in.
Well, maybe you remember Timothy Young?
And another.
He was the driver who killed my son. You gave him 6 months!
You thought about your case. Obviously you want answers. 6 months!
Well, they're both for fucking parking tickets.
There are ways that we can have his sentence extended. I can help you!
Too late! No! They let him go!
Don't become what he is! Don't become a killer!
Please. I have a son too.
Where are you going?
You gotta help me!
The pig guts begin to fill up the vat.
I'm so sorry.
Jeff goes to the incinerator and his son's belongings.
Oh, God.
You're killing me. I'm gonna die.
He tries to open the incinerator's door. He has more flashbacks to Dylan smiling happily. Then a light flashes and the pigs start coming in at faster intervals. Jeff goes to the incinerator and presses the button. Flames immediately lick around Dylan's soft toys and photos of him that are hanging up in there. Jeff watches sadly, distraught, as they begin to melt away. The key falls down into the ashes on a thin chain. Jeff pulls a tray out of the bottom and picks up the key while the spinning discs continue to slice up pigs as they fall into the trough. He climbs some steps, then goes down a ladder into the vat. The liquid and guts are almost covering the judge, just his face protrudes above them. Jeff searches for the lock around his neck. He releases him.
Come on!
And pulls him up out of the putrid gore as another load gushes in over them. Amanda's sitting in front of the bank of monitors, watching them and nonchalantly tying back her hair. Lynn starts preparing the operating room. She lays everything out on a long metal bench, then puts the surgical instruments into a metal bowl, which she pours a clear liquid into. She checks the drill and a handheld electric angle grinder. She looks at some brain scans, then washes her hands in the same clear liquid. Lynn's shaving the thin white hair off John's head when Amanda walks in.
He made it through the second test. The judge is alive.
Faster than I expected.
All right, John. I need you to keep your head to the side and keep still. What's going on here is that your brain is pushing against your skull. I'm gonna try to relieve the pressure by cutting away a little bit of your skull. It should help you with your headaches and drastically improve your motor skills. Do you understand?
I'll do well.
Lynn fills a syringe with drugs from a small vial, then squirts a bit out.
I'm gonna feel some slight discomfort.
Are you gonna give him a general anesthetic?
For a procedure like this, the patient needs to be fully alert.
She picks up a scalpel and looks over at the heart monitor, which shows the figures 80 over 20. Lynn's hand trembles uncontrollably as she prepares to cut John's head. Then she puts the scalpel down again, turning away. She composes herself and tries again, calmly this time. She cuts a disc the size of a small saucer in the top of his scalp, dabbing at the blood with white swabs. Amanda, although in the room, is unable to watch as Lynn works quickly to stem the bleeding.
Amanda, I need you here. Amanda. All right, John. You're gonna feel some pressure.
She uses a pair of pliers to peel back the skin and flesh from his skull.
Let's flip this.
stop the bleeding.
Lynn puts a couple of clamps on the skin around the edges of the opening.
Fill that syringe with alcohol from that bowl.
Amanda does it while Lynn swabs the blood.
Hurry.
Amanda hands Lynn the big syringe and she squirts alcohol into the cut, revealing John's ivory skull.
All right, John. I need you to keep your mouth closed. You're going to hear a lot of noise.
She picks up the drill. Lynn prepares herself, glances at the monitor which shows 80 over 30, then drills the first hole. John lies still with his eyes shut. Lynn starts the second hole. The monitor shows 101 over 30. It goes up to 118 as she starts the third hole. John opens his eyes as the drill bit penetrates his skull. Lynn drills a fourth hole.
John, how you doing?
Never better.
Hey.
Lynn picks up the angle grinder and takes a couple of deep breaths.
All right, you're gonna hear a lot of ringing. You need to stay very still.
She places the blade above his exposed skull. Amanda looks away as she starts to cut the bone. Blood spatters Lynn's face, and she has to pause for a moment before carrying on. She cuts one line, then another at 90 degrees to it. She starts the third line to form part of a square, joining up the holes. John has flashes of a blonde woman standing with her back to him in an autumnal park.
All right, John. I'm gonna remove the skull.
Lynn uses a small hook to lift up the piece of bone she's cut away. Beneath it is a thin membrane, which she cuts and pulls back, revealing the brain. The monitor shows 101 over 30. Lynn watches it, then relaxes a little.
He's stabilized.
Then 80 over 20.
John, I need you to raise your hand and flex your fingers.
He slowly does it, then the high number drops to 65.
John? John, raise your hand.
The blonde turns to look at him.
John, can you hear me?
11 over 17.
What's happening? John! What's happening to him? What's happening? What's wrong?
Lynn puts the oxygen mask over his mouth. In the park, the woman smiles and walks away provocatively. The number climbs back to 50.
Stay with me, John.
John's videoing the woman by a tree.
I love you.
Breathe! Breathe, damn it. Breathe, John.
John puts a hand on Lynn's arm. Amanda stares at her, shocked, scared, and angry. She walks through the workshop to her sleeping area and takes the small metal box out from under the bedding. She lifts out a red cloth, which she unrolls and puts down on the mattress, then lies a scalpel, a lighter, a bandage, and a few other items on it before holding up a bottle of alcohol.
You will give everything to me. every cell in your body. Is that understood?
Yes.
John looks at her intensely.
The marks on your arms, they're from another life. We'll leave that life behind. When you go down that corridor, there is no turning back. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Then start with this.
He hands Amanda a padded envelope. Back in the workshop, her body trembles as she remembers. In the past, she looks up at John.
Go.
Amanda turns and John watches as she walks away to the door, but stops to look back at him. His expression remains impassive and she carries on out. In the workshop, she's kneeling by her bed, but suddenly sits up and moves the box. A man walks through a dark building with a camera held up in front of him. As he's attacked, the flash goes and captures an image of the pig mask. Amanda, who's wearing the mask, wrestles him to the floor. She pulls it off. In the lab, Amanda stands and walks over to a workbench to pick something up. As she carries it back to the bed, she undoes her belt and pulls her trousers round her knees as she sits on the mattress. She takes the large sharp knife and presses the blade against her inner thigh, next to other similar length scars. The younger Amanda knocks on a large metal door. She slides it back to reveal a large, filthy and old white-tiled bathroom, the size used for sports teams. John's at the mirror, applying blood to his head, face and t-shirt.
Put his left leg in the shackle.
Amanda looks down at the man she attacked, who's now lying on a dolly, and picks up his legs to wheel him in. She rolls him onto the floor and casts the dolly aside while John picks up a paintbrush and draws a white cross on the grimy wall. Amanda turns a rusting tap on over a filthy bath set in a recess, then starts taking the man's shoes and socks off. John puts the lid back on a small white plastic tub and drops it into a kit bag. Also in there are a tape player and a pistol. He places a large white bottle next to it while Amanda clamps the shackle around the man's ankle. John wipes his hands and the sink while Amanda lifts the man up and drops him into the bath. John pours a large puddle of blood over the floor from a bucket. Another man's lying on his front on the floor nearby.
It's time to start our game.
Amanda drops something luminous onto the man in the bath's chest and turns the tap off. She looks at him as he stirs in the water, then picks up his boots and socks and watches John prepare an injection. Once he's done, he throws the file into the kit bag.
What's that?
Slow my heart rate. Relax my muscles.
He injects himself in the arm.
It's time.
Amanda picks up the bag and the bucket of blood.
Close the door behind you.
She puts them on the dolly while John closes his eyes and takes a deep breath. Then he lies down on his front in the pool of blood, with the gun in one hand and tape player in the other. Amanda turns off the light. She turns away distastefully and slides the door shut, killing the last of the light in the room. In the workshop, Amanda's wrapping her leg wound in bandage. In the operating room, Lynn slowly slides her wedding ring off the metal counter she put it on and looks down at it for a long moment before sadly putting it onto her trembling finger. She squeezes a white cloth out over a metal bowl and uses it to wipe her face. Still wearing the lethal neck brace, she looks over at John, who's lying on the bed with his eyes closed but looking much healthier, his scalp cleaned and patched up. Amanda walks in through the plastic curtains, and Lynn watches as she goes over to John and puts a hand on his shoulder, then rests her head against his affectionately. She continues to embrace him. Amanda strides over to her and grabs her neck, pulling a pistol out of her waistband.
Amanda! Put it away. Trust me. Put it away.
She forcefully lets go of Lynn.
Leave us alone. Now.
You're a fucking freak.
I apologize for her behavior. She swims in my sea. In the end, she will be the closest I've ever come to a connection, to being understood. But her emotion is also her weakness.
Blood drips on the floor from Amanda's hand, and she has another flashback. She opens the large sliding door into the tiled bathroom and shines a torch into the darkness. It lands on a freshly severed foot with the shackle still around it, then a bloody man slumped against a wall. Amanda walks slowly into the room, splaying light over the man against the wall, who doesn't move. She puts the torch down so that it shines on another man who's also sitting against a wall, but he doesn't move either. She puts a hand in front of his mouth, and he turns suddenly to look at her. She stands behind him. And puts a plastic bag over his face. She sobs as she pulls it tight to stop him breathing. He struggles to get free, weakly hitting out at her. He hits his head, and blood fills the bag, although it's only occasionally lit up by the torch that's lying on the floor. In the workshop, Amanda realizes she's cut her hand on the object she's holding. Jeff walks along another gloomy corridor. The judge is with him and takes off his tie, then stumbles after him. Jeff stops at another door with "Here's your chance" written on it in red letters. By the wall is another box and a note with the message, "One step closer to your revenge." On the back is a picture of his daughter. He takes a gun clip out of the box.
I'm so sorry about your son, Jeff. But let me tell you something that I know for sure. No sentence I gave him, not 500 years, not even death, nothing will take your pain away. And vengeance doesn't solve anything. It only makes the pain greater, Jeff.
Jeff puts the picture of his daughter with the others of himself and Dylan. They have all been torn from the same original. Then he kicks the door open. It pulls the pin out of a timer next to a man on a cross.
What the fuck? Somebody help me!
There's a metal contraption around his head and neck. Straps hold his arms in place, and there's a tape recorder hanging around his neck. He watches Jeff approach.
What the fuck are you doing?
Hello, Jeff. If you are listening to this, that means that the confrontation you so long dreamed of is finally unfolding.
Do something!
In your head, he is a cipher. A symbol of your life changing. A symbol of death. I present him to you now as a simple human being. His name is Timothy Young. He's 27 years old, a medical student, with a mother and a father just like you. A man whose life also changed the day your son died.
Flashback to the accident.
That day he made a terrible mistake.
Photographs show Timothy's anguish.
You believed he didn't pay for that mistake. And now is your chance to make him pay. The device Timothy is strapped to is my personal favorite. I call it the Rack.
His hands and feet are also clamped into place.
The human body is a miraculous creation. Ever wonder how far the arm can twist? This device is going to start twisting. There is a chance he might live, though, with your help. To your right is a box. At the back of the box is a key. It's tied to the trigger of a shotgun. The question you have to ask yourself is this. Are you willing?
Have mercy.
To take a bullet for the man who killed your son? Does do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Apply here, Jeff. Make your choice.
The timer hits 1 minute. The door swings shut.
I can't just stand there!
Cogs start turning, slowly twisting Timothy's outstretched arms and legs round, little by little.
Hold on, son, we're here. Jeff!
The judge tries to stop it.
Jeff! Just standing there, you're an accomplice to murder. Are you a murderer?
I wanted to kill him every day. For 3 years, I wanted to kill you. Maybe I am.
The clamps twist further round. Timothy's skin breaks, revealing blood and bone.
Okay.
Jeff goes to the glass box with the key and the rifle in it as the cogs continue to move round. He looks at it from the outside, at the trigger and the barrel.
Hold on, son.
Timothy's shin bone snaps. Jeff takes hold of the key and starts to untie it from the piece of string it's hanging from. The cogs move further around, twisting his limbs to obscene limits and snapping the bones in his arms. Jeff concentrates on untying the key from the bit of string.
Got the key.
The gun fires and takes off half of the judge's face. The cogs turn, twisting Timothy's other leg round. The shin bone snaps, breaking out of the skin. Jeff searches frantically for a lock as the machine starts to twist Timothy's head round.
Stop!
fucking am! I fucking am!
Jeff holds on to Timothy as his face looks over his own shoulder and carries on further round. He looks up, grief-stricken, and steps away as the head finishes its rotation. It's now completely back to front, and Jeff stands helplessly in front of the mutilated body. Staring down at the monitors with a gun in her hand.
Don't you think it would be wise to engage me in conversation for your own sake? I asked you to tell me about your husband.
Lynn stands with her back to him.
It's like we're strangers now.
And?
Last time I saw him, we were so disconnected. But now? I'd give anything in the world to see my husband.
Matrimony's always fascinated me. Husbands barely able to look at their wives. Wives on their backs in motel rooms with perfect strangers. People who bear children only to neglect them. Till death do us part, indeed.
I don't know what you think you know, but my marriage has survived more suffering than someone like you could ever grasp.
Suffering? You haven't seen anything yet. Someone like me, who am I?
A monster? A murderer?
I don't condone murder, and I despise murderers.
Please.
He takes hold of her hand.
Please, let me go.
Amanda walks in and sees them together.
You're fine, Amanda. We don't need you.
He looks across at her.
You said we're fine.
Lynn tries to pull her hand away as Amanda walks back out into the workshop.
If you make it through this, Lynn, you're going to thank me one day, just as Amanda did.
Amanda takes the envelope John gave her out of a drawer and opens it.
Saving after all.
He pours wax onto the table.
Tell me about your daughter. I understand she's quite a little athlete.
Jeff grabs a metal hook in the corridor.
Or we could talk about your son.
What did you say?
Why are you living with the dead when you have such a beautiful family? A husband who's endured alone. A daughter who needs her mother. Patients who need a competent physician who looks them in the eye and treats them like human beings.
He's completed the third test.
Congratulations, Lynn. You're free to go.
Yeah, but he's not all the way out yet.
Undo her collar, Amanda, and let her go.
No, he's not finished. He's not all the way.
Amanda, Lynn is more important than you know. Unlock her collar and let her go.
I said no.
She cocks the pistol she's holding.
Amanda, there are rules.
I said no! She doesn't deserve to go free.
You promised.
I didn't promise you shit.
Amanda, even with that gun, it is Lynn who holds your life. Her hand.
Fuck you. You give her control over me? Fuck you!
I won't tell anyone, I promise.
Shut up.
Don't. Please, I have a family.
Shut up. Shut up, shut up, shut up!
And stop fucking moving around!
And what about the other test subjects?
What about them?
Is that how you felt about them?
No!
Is that how you felt about Eric Matthews?
Game over.
I'll fucking kill you!
How I felt about Eric Matthews.
She screams in the dark. A man staggers along on his useless foot.
Eric Matthews, learn nothing from your test. He was the same person he was, and he arrested me. When he framed me. When he took me down.
In a concrete corridor, he whacks a younger Amanda with a metal pipe, knocking her to the ground. His mutilated foot gives way under his weight. He grabs Amanda as she tries to crawl away, but she kicks him off. Then he bites her leg. He punches her in the head. Then slams her against the wall. He rolls over and grabs her.
Where's my son?
Where is he, you junkie bitch? Where is he?
He slams her head into the wall, then throws her down on the floor. He takes a knife out of his waistband.
Tell me where he is. Tell me where he is.
I'm right fucking here.
She kicks his obliterated foot and he drops to the ground while she crawls away. Battered, bloodied and bruised, Amanda sits up in the shadows.
Ben!
She takes something out of a bag.
You're nothing, bitch! You're nothing!
The man manages to sit up.
You're not Jigsaw.
Amanda walks away.
You're not Jigsaw, bitch!
She stops and turns round to face back down the corridor, the bag by her feet.
You hear me? You're not Jigsaw, bitch. You're nothing! I'll fucking kill you! No!
That's right. I'm a murderer. You took my life from me. So I just returned a fucking favor.
No, Amanda, that's what you thought. But I know different. You left him for dead, didn't you? But I cleaned up your mistakes, and I forgave you for them.
You do is no different than murder. You torture people. You watch them die. But now you're begging me not to kill this worthless bitch on the grounds of some game?
You're walking us toward a precipice, Amanda. Step back.
It's bullshit. Nobody changes. It's all a lie.
If you fail in this, we all fail. Succeed and we all succeed.
It's a lie!
Jeff lashes out at a light in the corridor.
I'll tell you, she hasn't changed. Because nobody fucking changes. Nobody is reborn. It's all bullshit! It's all a fucking lie! And I'm just a pawn in your stupid games.
Jeff gets to the gate that Amanda originally went in through. He thinks back to the first card and the key in the box and takes it out of his pocket.
I don't mean anything to you.
Oh, you mean everything to me.
Fuck you!
Our fates are linked. I've tried to help you, Amanda.
So help me! Fix me! Fix me, motherfucker! I'm standing right here. Why is she so important to you?
She's not important to me. She's important to you.
She's not important to me.
I beg you to reconsider that.
Jeff finds a gun in a box with the message, "Last chance."
This is your last chance, Amanda.
She's nothing.
Jeff looks at the back of the card, but it's blank. He picks up the gun and loads the clip with one bullet into it. Jeff walks into the workshop and makes his way through it.
You think about what you promised me.
Hmm?
Think about our dreams. You think about tomorrow.
He stands outside the operating room.
In?
Jeff!
Amanda shoots her as she steps through the curtains, and Jeff catches her. Jeff shoots Amanda in the neck. John watches as she covers the wound, wide-eyed and startled. He holds a hand out to Amanda as Jeff gently lowers Lynn to the floor.
Amanda. It's okay.
Jeff leans over Lynn. He looks up at John. Blood trickles out of Amanda's mouth, and she drops fully to the floor and reaches her hand out to John. Then she dies.
Game over.
John turns his head to look back down at the end of the bed where Jeff's standing, pointing a gun at him.
Misery, it will not bring back your son. Think of your daughter, Jeff. She needs you now more than ever. You can't kill me, Jeff.
Jeff stares at him, then begins to laugh.
Your wife's dying, Jeff. Her time's running out.
Jeff crouches down in front of Lynn, who's still wearing the collar.
Jeff, do not miscalculate. Your fate is in my hands. Your wife's fate is in my hands.
They hold hands.
I'm taking you home, okay?
Though you may not see any threat, there are threats all around you. Jeff, if you try to move your wife, she will die. I can have an ambulance here in 4 minutes. Would you like to take your wife out of here tonight? Would you like to take her to safety? Stand and face me, Jeff.
Stay with me.
Right now. Would you like to get your life back? Would you, Jeff? I can make that happen. Which is it, Jeff? Come on. Yes or no?
Yes. What do you want?
One final test. The rules are simple. Over on that table, there's a host of vicious implements, which you can use to exact your pound of flesh, to take your vengeance, to indulge your obsession. Or you can choose to put your vengeance aside, and you can forgive. You can forgive me for the pain that I've caused you and your wife tonight. Which is it gonna be, Jeff?
He drops a circular saw blade on the floor.
It's up to you. Live or die, Jeff. Make our choice.
Jeff looks down at John, who turns his head away from him. He puts a hand on John's chest and leans forward towards him. Then he steps away and goes back to Lynn, who's slumped against the wall.
Jeff.
He's picked up the circular saw, and John smiles as he walks over towards him with it in his bloody hands. Lynn tries to stop him as he slices John's neck open with one quick swipe. A red light on Lynn's neck brace starts to flash. A warning on the monitor reads, heart rate alarm. John holds up a tape recorder.
Hello, Jeff. I made this tape as an insurance policy, if you will.
Jeff!
And if you're listening to it, then it's time to collect. I was your final test of forgiveness. And if you are listening to this, then you fail. Now you must pay the price. The price for living for nothing but vengeance. Now I will give you something to live for. I told you that you couldn't kill me, Jeff. But I didn't tell you why. And the answer is simple. I am the person responsible for the loss of your child. I am the only person who knows where your daughter is. She only has a limited supply of air, Jeff. And if you want to get her back, you'll have to play a game.
The heart monitor flatlines. John drops the tape player. Jeff screams.
Jeff!
Images of all the victims flash by. Lynn's face has been blown off and blood and gore covers the wall behind her.